Okay, go ahead.
Hey, Lily.
Hi.
You mentioned a couple of times that you'd go back and visit with these three men. If I understand right, two of them were when you were young at the playground. But were there more visits after that?
Yes. They're not associated with any accident or with anything. Sometimes I will go to sleep and I'm back there. Sometimes when I'm feeling very lost, I can feel like they're with me and I have answers that I would never have thought of myself. I know they didn't come from me. I'm not that smart. The thing about it is every answer is simple. Every answer has no strings attached, has nothing to do with me. It has to do with simple things. As something as simple as giving someone a hug, or offering a glass of water, or seeing someone lost in a parking lot and helping them find their car. Nothing's ever this huge, big ordeal. It's always just simple, gentle answers.
Michael?
Yes.
Well, Dr. Cutler was talking about his patient, and when she came back, she felt better and looked better and stuff like that. You're still having back pains and migraines, is that right?
Actually, I haven't had a migraine since that day. I have light problems. I have my sunglasses on because my eyes started wicking out and flashing all over the place, and I'm having a hard time seeing right this second. But the pain never shows up from the migraines. Back problem, yeah, that's just been getting steadily worse because I've been a heavy industrial electrician, lifting very hard, heavy weights, moving very, very heavy wire, doing things my body really shouldn't. Migraines, gone.
In the medical literature, there's about 50 to 55 different theories trying to explain out-of-body experience. In medicine, if there are 55 different theories about something, none of them are right. This is truly a real phenomenon. It has a common theme, I think you mentioned it, enhancing other people's lives. This is one of our duties on Earth, is to enhance other people, to help them along in this struggle of Earth life, so to speak. The near-death experience, it seems to me, falls in about four categories. There's the person who experiences being out of his body, floating about 8 feet in the air, looking down at his body. And he remains in contact with his body until he gets back in it. Experiencers use the term snapped or popped an awful lot when they describe getting back in their body. There's this snapping and popping. And it is not exactly pain-free. The second type I would call is a person who can leave the immediate presence of their body and wander around. They may find themselves in the waiting room of the hospital listening to a conversation by their family. A third type is a less common type, but the experiencer will find themselves in a realm, a spiritual realm, and will meet, as this gentleman did, relatives. And they will be in a room and they will have a sense of where they can go and where they can. If they go to a certain place, they will not be able to get back. They seem to innately know this, or is it explained to by their relatives. And the epitome of how about an experience is the experiencer who goes and has a guide meeting, and they have what I call the grand tour. They are taken around and they see what the immediate world is going to be like after death. George Ritchie saw five different levels of existence. There may be more, but he saw five. That sort of gives you a background. Far most common kind is the first just being out of your body, standing in the air and looking at it. That's the most common. The next, wandering around in the vicinity of where your body is. The next one is going far beyond to spiritual realms, be relatives or friends, and the last is the grand tour. Has that been your experience?
My observation. I didn't have all those experiences.
Observations.
Yes, yes, you're right on. Yeah. I haven't heard anyone explain it that way. Have you, Craig?
I thought that was great.
Yeah, it was great. That was awesome. Dr. Ring himself would be, truly, that was such a great category. So I'd never thought of it that way. He calls, Dr. Ring would say that the levels of experience that you call the fourth, the deepest level, is what he calls a core experience. And as researchers, what we look at is the 20 characteristics, and then we look at those who have maybe seven of them, we call a core experience, and then so on. But you really classified them well. Yes, I have a question for Michael over here. Did you have something else you wanted to share? Okay, thank you. That was awesome. Michael, how did you know you had an aneurysm, and where was the aneurysm? Brain or aorta or where?
It was the back of my head.
And did they discover that afterwards? Did you have an MRI, or was that something that the doctor said that's what you must have had, or what happened?
At first it was, that's what a doctor thought had to have occurred.
Okay.
To explain it as to why I didn't have migraines anymore, he figured that it was pressure being caused by a blood vessel starting to expand in my brain. Rather recently, beginning of this year, I decided I was going to have an experience with a concrete floor falling on my head from 20 feet up, and had a nice CAT scan, which they verified that there is actual dead brain matter there. There is almost a blackness on my short-term memory for about 2 weeks. I can remember generalized things, but specific details, to which my girlfriends and my ex-wife constantly used to their advantage. But, yeah. So, there has been some actual brain damage because of it.
How has your life changed since having had this experience? Let me just change that question a little bit. If you were observing yourself before the experience, and then you observe yourself after the experience, what do you see is different in you?
One, I actually try to actually live my life for me. I stopped worrying about what other people thought of me. That took a long time. For the first probably 4 or 5 years after this occurred, I had a very hard time dealing with that it actually occurred to begin with. The first person I told, and for the longest time the only person I told, was my mother, who actually was a rather frequent attender to these meetings, and she's like, wait a second, this sounds familiar. It took her a year and a half to drag me in here. And obviously it took even longer for this to occur. It's been almost 10 years since my near-death experience. When I finally stopped denying who I was, my life changed drastically, and that occurred after my divorce. But because my ex-wife was trying to push me into a mold I just didn't fit into. And now, I would not call myself religious in the slightest. In fact, I refuse to have any religious label put on me in the slightest. I don't even claim to be Christian anymore. It doesn't say that I don't believe in Christ, I'm not a Christian. And I have nothing to do with religion period at this point, because one of the things that sat with me that I came back with is a religion is not where you find your truth. You find your truth in your heart. And I have become incredibly spiritual. A lot of people who meet me would say that I'm a perfect model Christian, but as I said, I don't classify myself as a Christian in the slightest. I just try to help everybody I can, do the best I can by them.
Michael, were you a child prodigy, an electrician at 13, or did your parents push you?
I'm going to laugh at this one. Actually, a combination of both.
Yes.
Almost every one of my siblings, and I'm the oldest of 14, every one of us is ranked over 160 on our IQ tests. The electrical thing had nothing to do with the child prodigy thing. It had to do with, more or less, it was the family business. My parents were both electricians, and it was kind of one of those things. I grew up on a farm, was relatively homeschooled most of my life, except for a short period of time when we lived in East Texas between the ages of 11 and 13 for me. Moved back here when I was 13, and I really did not like the public school system. So I said, I don't want to go to public school.
And I'm like, okay, go to work. And I continue going to public school kind of part-time after that, just for a couple hours a day for foreign language classes and science classes. And by the time I reached 10th grade, I did not want to attend Bingham High School. At the time, it was at 6 times its maximum capacity what it was designed to be at. It took 45 minutes to get down the hall from one class to the other. I didn't want to be a part of that. So I dropped completely out of school in 10th grade. I was 15 at the time? Right around the time I was 16, they opened up Copper Hills High School, and it was on a... Nobody was being forced to go the first year. So it was just the people that actually wanted to go there. And I'm like, it's a good time to start over. And so I actually went back to school and got my high school diploma. Went to college at night during the entire time because I had to for my electrical apprenticeship.
I'm very interested in your all the questions you asked. And I was wondering, did you get the idea that this life is the life where we make it, or are you in reincarnation? Can you get any idea about that?
I have never met an experiencer who talked about reincarnation. Could be possible.
Michael?
Okay, you just met one. The reason I'm going to say this is something I noticed years ago, because I actually attended faithfully every single month for 2.5 years here. And looking at my own experience when I was doing that and judging against what I had seen as well, everybody that dies sees what they see through a set of rose-colored glasses. Your own perceptions are what you will see on the other side. A very good example of this is the movie What Dreams May Come. Until your eyes are completely, so to speak, washed of what you experience in this life, it will remain as what you want to see and what you're comfortable with. If you're going someplace you're comfortable.
What you're capable of.
Exactly, it's what you're capable of understanding and seeing. One of the side effects I came back with is I remember the last 2,000 years, every one of my lifetimes, in depth. There's a block from prior to 2,000 years. I've since learned why, but that's a different story, and it's kind of personal. But for the last 2,000 years, the first time has to do with life in Judea around the time of Christ. I went to the Crusades, first crusade at the beginning. I came back the second time with sodas in a way to atone for what I did the first time. I would have considered what I did the first time as giving rise to the myths of vampires. I was a very bloodthirsty person at that time. I died in the siege of Acre in 1043 AD. The second time when I came back, it was at the fall of Jerusalem at the end of the First Crusade. If you watch the movie Kingdom of Heaven, that's a pretty good accurate. There's a few liberal things, but that's pretty accurate to what actually happened. And I fought in a rather large number of wars throughout the history. I have a lot of, I don't know what it is with me, I'm fascinated with fighting. I usually end up dying before the age of 35 in most of my lifetimes. I usually get killed. I will turn 30 in 1 month.
Michael, with all your experience, you noted when you started talking that you had tried to attempt suicide about 50 times. Why?
That's kind of a personal thing, and I'd rather not share it. But needless to say, from the age of 14, 15, to the time I was about 20 when that occurred, my life was a living hell. Trust me, you don't want to go to shell too.
Because you said there were things that happened that, you know, so that did not go through with it, or different things that you felt like there was somebody stopping you from doing that. Do you think that that was relevant to your experience, that someone's continuing to want you to be here to do good things, to help other people?
The answer to that is yes. There was something I, because of the rush of originally recounting it, that I did not mention. When I said that I would come back to visit, I was told exactly when I would die again. And then I was told I was coming back again. And I was given an approximate time it would be before I left this planet. It would be a very, very, very long time. That would be the second time.
It's interesting, if you have an out-of-the-body experience and you ask somebody in the vicinity what the true church is, you're going to get a cryptic answer. You're not going to get an answer. this is a characteristic of almost all of practice. In fact, I don't recall ever having a discussion with an experiencer who describes being told what the true church is. You'll get an answer, seek and you shall find. Knock and it shall be opened unto you. When you see it, you'll know it. And these are kind of cryptic things. And it just doesn't seem to be the order of things in the next world for this information to come out or be spread around. I don't understand why, but that's the way it is. I have with me Out of the Body Experience 101. This is George Ritchie's little book. You can buy this up at Deseret Book or almost any of the bookstores uptown. Returning from Tomorrow, George G. Ritchie. I met Dr. Ritchie a couple of times when he was in Salt Lake. His experience briefly was this, that he was in World War II. He was in some far-off, desolate military base in Texas. And he'd been accepted at the University of Virginia Medical School. And he had to get back east at a certain time in order to enroll in the school. But unfortunately, he developed pneumonia, and the evening before he was to board the train, or the evening of the boarding of his train, he had a chest x-ray taken, and he passed out after the examination. He had a temperature of 104. Well, he died, was pronounced dead. His body was taken to the base morgue. But George Ritchie found himself hurling through the air as a spirit trying to get to Richmond, Virginia. He finally found himself that something had happened to him when he leaned against a telephone pole and wasn't there. At least his body went right through the telephone pole. He went back to the base and found his body, and he tried to enter it. But on his way back, he was met by, he saw a beam of light, and the light approached him, and he heard a voice that said, stand, you're in the presence of the Son of God. And this being was Jesus Christ, and he had the top experience. And he saw worlds, status of different progression for different people in different places. It's hard to describe. You have to read the book. But it will be one of the most fascinating books you've ever read.
Lily, I have a question for you. Do you still experience when you meet people, do you sense their troubles and things, or did you lose that after they told you to talk to people?
I have the pleasure of meeting people and them being very open with me. And so I enjoy people. I keep looking at Carrie over here because I don't know how to answer this. I do know that there are a lot of people that are brought to my life so that we can talk. Just because I know something doesn't mean that it's shared openly or with other people. I don't know how to answer that. Let's just say I meet people that are just grateful all the time. So I'm very lucky with that.
I think one of the things is people get afraid that we can read their minds. Are we correct? And that really isn't true. We get a concept, a feeling of, are you a good person? Are you someone who would harm people? Things like that. But to read your mind, no. It just isn't like that. And sometimes we know things for people. Like I've had the experience of meeting a person and spending time with her and knowing, not knowing why I knew it, but knowing that music was who she was. And I could never remember her name. Every time we talked and I was going to introduce her or something, I couldn't remember her name. Make a long story short, one day she said, what do you think of when you see me? And I said, music. You are music. And she started to cry. This is a professional lady. She started to cry. And she said,
I had a career in music until I met my husband. I was studying music. We put him through college, and then I was supposed to be able to go back, and I didn't. And it has broken my heart. It has just, it's hurt me. It's been hurting so much. And she said, I don't know why you knew. I didn't know anything, really. I just knew that she was music. I ran into her a few years later, and she had gone back to college. Now, she had been out of school for 20-some years, was working in a different profession, had gone back to school, was studying music, and had and her husband was now behind her on this. He was very supportive. So I couldn't read her mind, but from her was coming something that she needed someone to affirm for her. And that's happened hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. You know, if somebody, you can't read minds. I can't anyway. And I haven't really run into anyone who can, exactly.
I had a question. I can't remember your name.
Michael.
You mentioned that the man that gave you a hug had the marks in his hands. You called him Grandpa. The thought that came to me in the question, did you have a grandpa person on earth, somebody that was older that you felt unconditional love for, so you maybe transferred that onto that being? Or was your own grandpa really special to you? Do you see a connection there?
Okay, I was going to try to avoid this one, but no, it has to do with literal. It's not figurative. And goes back to 2,000 years ago. If that answers that question.
I was just at IANS in Durham, North Carolina, about 2 weeks ago. You all may be aware of this, but they figure there's like 23 million near-death experiences on the planet. I don't know how they could figure that out, but they came up with a good-sized number. And my interest in this for many years has been from the perspective of healing, of improving relationships and healing across the board. And, you know, what is the truth about life that would help us heal? And it does appear that both people who have had near-death experiences are certainly interested in putting energy in helping people feel better and do better and get more out of life. So it is sort of for some reason, it's a rather big healing force on the planet, that at least there's a lot of potential for it. I had a daughter who died, she was bipolar, she died 17 years ago in an accident, she was asphyxiated in Italy, and somehow as part of my research I connected with a couple of very good psychics, and she's had a number of jobs over there. In one of them she helped other people, that young people who very surprisingly found themselves on the other side, and she helped them get oriented over there. But this last time I talked with her, I said, what are you doing now? And she says, I'm working on finding joy, which I thought, I guess we do that all along. We do it here and we do it there, and it's an important thing to do no matter what. The last thought I had was that I really got into this research from the standpoint of studying healing Bible passages. And the more I studied those Bible passages, the less I was involved with any kind of a religion, and the more I realized that that the near-death experience people were on target with regard to a lot of what the Bible has to say. And, of course, the psychics echo a lot of the things that the near-death experiences are coming up with. So, there's a lot of confirmation and affirmation between NDE people and psychics and also the Bible around this whole thing, which is just a wonderful awareness that more and more people are coming to. So this is the first meeting I've ever been to one of these groups. I think this is absolutely fabulous, and I'm really glad I was here.
I just want to say one thing. Just because you know something about someone doesn't mean that you know how they feel towards you. And I don't know if this is the same thing for you as it is for me, but my relationships are kind of difficult because I honestly can't tell how someone feels towards me. If it is not verbal, I don't have the skills to tell when they're being warm to me, other than being friends or something like that. If it's not verbal, I can't feel that. I can feel the love between two people. I can feel the love of a parent and a child. I can feel that I love my children. I don't know if how they feel unless they verbalize to me. So it's not something that's to do with paranoia. I'm not, when I hear about what other people are feeling or thinking, it has nothing to do with me. And in fact, I don't think I've ever heard anything that has to do with me. So it's not something that is... I actually went to a psychiatrist to find out about this because I thought, you know, I've been reading all these books, my, you know, paranoid and my schizophrenic, all this stuff. And no, I am not narcissistic. I'm not trying to hear things from other people to be able to manipulate. Nothing like that in those. And so the information that does come up is not ever given out unless asked for. And I didn't mean to carry on with that, but I didn't. There are so many of us that can do that, that know things, and I'm sure that most of you do too. Like before the phone rings, you know the phone's going to ring. Well, same type of thing. You know things before they're going to come up.
This is fairly common, I think, with experiencers that if they have an out-of-the-body experience, there may be some part of their personality that is enhanced, or they're more aware spiritually than they were before, and it is in different areas. And I don't know what happens or how that happens. I do know this: there are angels in the operating room. That's another subject. There's great concern from the other side about us here in this life. I'm a member of the Murray Rotary Club, and I was giving a little talk on the out-of-body experience at the risk of being ostracized as being crazy and nuts. But one of the members of the club, and this gives you an idea of how frequent this experience occurs. There's 50 members of the club, and one guy gets up and comes up to me afterwards and says, "Well, I had one of those." This gentleman had just retired at the age of 40, sold two businesses, and he's a multimillionaire. And I says, "Would you care to tell me about it?" He says, "Well, after I sold my businesses, I went out and bought a Harley. And I was driving north on State Street, and I finished the sentence for him, and a little old lady turned left in front of you." He says, "Yes, how'd you know?" I says, "I've heard this 10 times. He says, "Well," I says, "the first thing I knew, I was 8 feet, standing 8 feet above the ground, looking down at my body." He says, "They were doing wonderful things to me. My legs were all torn up, and they were pulling on them, straightening them out. And I felt really good." And said, "But then the body, somebody came along, and they put this tube down my throat." He says, "I popped back in my body, and I hurt like expletive." And he pulled up his pant leg and he showed me a very deformed leg that was anteriorly bowed out and the front was bowed out. It was not straight, just a mess, but he was alive. But I said, "Well," I asked him this question: "What do you think, is there any significance you can attach to your experience?" His wife happened to be at the meeting, and she came in the elbow with her, in the stomach with the elbow, and said, "Yes, why, what does this mean to me?" He says, "I don't want to think about it. I don't want to think about it. If I think about it, it bothers me." Many people who have out-of-body experiences become troubled. They have a high divorce rate. There are problems. It's just the way it goes.
both of you have mentioned divorce, and I you just brought it up, Doctor, and I can imagine that it's something like, almost like leaving the other one behind. You've learned too much and experienced too much that they could never ever relate to. And I guess that's more a question than a statement.
I was okay with everything until my daughter was in a car accident. And it actually wasn't a car accident. The trailer came off the back of a truck and hit her. And she had a lot of experience. She didn't ever talk about it. But I knew she was unconscious for 8 days. They thought she was going to have total brain damage. I was not going to ever be able to walk. She didn't have any organ in her body that hadn't been punctured. And the tailgate had gone through the side of her head. And so they pretty much told me she was going to be deformed. Within 2 weeks, she was talking. She didn't have memory about the accident. Her body completely healed. She had even had a child. She later on was able to have a child. She has a little mark down the side of her face. She's very beautiful. I knew at that point in time that I had to get my life together and do what I was told. And it didn't mean leaving him behind. And that's kind of what it was. And he's a very good man. I'm still living very dearly. He's happily married again. We're good friends. We spend all the holidays together with the family, and the kids are most important. I think that the hardest part is being able to share and having someone that hasn't through it be able to comprehend all of these things that you know and understand. He couldn't lie to me, and I can't shame him. Those kind of things are hard enough when it's a real marriage, when you're really not knowing, but when you're aware, it's even harder.
Yeah, it's really hard to do this. My problem with my ex-wife is, I was completely honest with her from the very beginning what had happened. She was probably the second or third person I told about what happened, which was probably a really stupid idea on my part, because I spent the next 5.5 years being completely ridiculed and mocked for it, and basically constantly her putting me down that I was crazy, deranged, etc., and she wonders why I was on the road all the time for work. I mean, I tried to be a good husband as best I could whenever I came home. The way she always put it is, emotionally I wasn't there. Off in some other different world. And it's true. And so for pretty much the entirety of my marriage, because of that, I suppressed it, tried to ignore it. It just kind of welled up like water behind a dam until right before she divorced me, it burst. And I'm like, I can't do this anymore. I can't keep denying who I am. I didn't tell her this. And I went trying to find answers and went back to doing what I had been told I had to do. And it really wasn't until I really got together with my current girlfriend that she's pushed me to keep looking, to keep finding, doing what I need to do. No matter what it does to our relationship, no matter what it does, she's always there for me. Of course, she was my best friend for it too, so that helps.
Did you have children?
Yes, I have 3 very lovely children. And the divorce is very hard for me dealing with that, because every time I see them, I see her, and the feelings of betrayal to go with it. But I'm trying to be more of a factor of their life. It's been 2 years since the divorce now, and I'm trying to be a decent father for it.
There seems to be a growing awareness that the being that goes out of the body and either comes back or stays there is the true being. And the people who have not experienced it don't realize that, but the people who have experienced it are getting some sense that that is our true being. And so one course of action which seems to help sometimes in relationships is when the experiencer, knowing more about what our true being is, connects with the true being in the person who doesn't know that that's their true being, it lifts, it has a tendency to lift the other person to a better place. I mean, obviously, true connection and true dialogue is between true beings. And the rest of it is old stuff that we've learned that ultimately turns out not to be the case when we transit or whatever goes on. But there's a tremendous opportunity for people who understand the nature of our true being because of those kinds of experiences or just because of what they read or because of people that they know, to really improve their relationships by connecting from their true being to the true being of the other person, and in the process lifting people up. But it's a great thing to work on. It's easier said than done, but it's a lot of fun to go that way because it's a real love and harmony based way of being and trying to connect.
There are healthcare professionals in this valley that they were to come to this meeting would say we're all nuts. And people are very critical of those who say I was out of my body. I had one patient who I was taking her history and physical, and she mentioned that she had asthma. I says, well, how severe is it? She says, well, I don't have it very much anymore, but when I did have it, I almost died. And she says, in fact, I did die. Well, I was interested in the out-of-the-body experience. I said, would you care to tell me about it? And she was in a hospital, in a bed, alone, 2 o'clock in the morning, severe asthma attack. She had 2 daughters, for which she was the only caregiver. She had a husband who ran off and had no interest in her or the children. And she prayed that she might live and raise those 2 kids. Now, what more legitimate prayer can you have if you're a deity and you have a soft heart? You do something about it. Well, a light appeared in her room, and in this light there stood a being, and she said she never felt so much love in her life as came from this being. And she knew that this being knew everything about her. And she said, my past history is not very good. But this being knew and understood me. And this being told her if she really wanted to live, she would live. If she kept struggling, she would live. The next thing she knew, she woke up in the morning and the asthma attack was gone. Well, she said she told that experience to her mother. Her mother told her she was crazy. Told it to her sisters, got the same thing. And there's a skepticism about these things that cannot be measured or weighed and examined in the usual scientific way. When you talk to these people, there's the spirit that comes from them and their demeanor, their attention to detail when they're talking to you, confirms the validity of the experience. Why would we reject this great news from the spirit world? Why reject it? It can enhance our lives. My wife was a super skeptic. I'll tell you about that after.
One of the things I was just going to say is that I can tell you, we work with a lot of people that are terminal. There is nothing more comforting for them than to know that you truly believe that there's something after this. I can tell you, I know that there is more. I know that the physical being that's sitting in front of me, whoever you are, is only a package for right now. There is so much more to you that you're going to experience in this life and the next one. I know with every ounce of my being, with every cell, that there's more.
This knowledge, expression of belief is very common. People who have had an out-of-body experience, they know. They have no fear of death. No fear of death.
I just would like to say, because you hit a nerve, I've never had an out-of-death experience either, and I've been coming to these things for on and on for 4 or 5 years. But I personally want to acknowledge all 3 of you and say how I really appreciate you're sharing these things with me, because I'm in a relationship with a young lady that is a healthcare professional. And even though I've never had an near-death experience or anything like that, I've always had a natural knowing inside of me that there's more to this life than meets the eye. It's like the tip of the iceberg. And so when you sit here and confirm these things, I have no idea if you're telling me what's real or what's not real, but I just rely on my natural knowing, my inner, you know, because when I was a child, I believed in Santa Claus, but something says, oh, this isn't real. You know, there's Santa Claus's mom and dad. Bottom line is, you are here to teach us how to love ourselves and how to love others. And you people that have these near, I mean, this is my conviction, that you people that have this near-death experience are here to enlighten us, to put away our shame, blame, and judgmental, and our beat-up sticks that we continually go through to beat ourselves up and say, I'm not good enough, because we are. We are good enough, and I get that. I get that from you three, and I just wanted to say this and acknowledge you, even though it's not a question. I just wanted to acknowledge you for being here and confirming things that I've been searching for, that I've always questioned myself. Well, how come I feel like this? But this girl in this relationship, she's so into her medical profession and stuff like that, that unless there's a pill for it, there's no help.
There is a pill for it.
Thank you.
Have her talk to the nurses in the intensive care unit in her hospital. You ask those nurses, have you ever had a patient who had an out-of-body experience? The spit will come on their face, and they'll say yes. I talked to the chief, the supervisor, the head doctor, University of Utah's cardiac intensive care unit. This woman is very bright. She's a very capable person. Have you ever had a patient who had an out-of-the-body experience? She didn't answer me for 30 seconds, and she said, yes. I says, what do you make of it? What does it mean to you? And I could, the wheels were grinding for the appropriate answer. One that would be acceptable to her superiors and to me. And she said, I don't know. I just don't know. But they're the people who know, because they are in contact with people who are coming, skipping along towards the next world.
Question for Lily. When you said you saw three men, do you think those three men were relatives?
I know who they are. This goes along with keeping your mouth shut. Mom's thanking me, saying no, don't tell. I never saw the one person. I knew he was there. For me, I feel that that's the Holy Spirit. I did see, he called himself Jehovah. For me, I'm Mormon. And when everybody was, you know, I'm a 9-year-old child, and I said Jehovah, my mother said, we're not Jehovah Witnesses. No clue. So I stopped talking. And then there's another name. And for me right now, I think that's enough. Sometimes, you know, you need to keep things personal. I do know that it's the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, and I believe in the Trinity. I don't know how more to say that they're all individuals, but I do believe that. And that was a really good question.
Thank you.
Yes.
Hi, do any of you believe that the only true out-of-body is through near-death?
No. I believe that you don't have to have a near-death to have an out-of-body. With the people that I talk to that have serious diseases or that are looking for help or need to talk, they get to a place where they can communicate. A lot of it has to do with learning to love yourself and to be able to trust that it's okay to communicate. And once you get to that point, then you'll find out that there are a lot of people will say they had a dream, or that will relate it to something that they can put their hands on to explain to somebody else what's happened to them, they won't call it a near-death experience. They're not going to call it going in and talking to God. They may call it, or they may call it a fantasy. Little kids are the ones that will actually come up with the most and closest non-fear way of expressing that they've seen the three, or seen someone, or talked to a relative that isn't there. Or when they, it's really fun to watch little kids play, because they'll see imaginary people, but they will have real conversations where there are periods of time where someone is speaking, and then they'll answer, and they'll go back and forth. Some of that is imaginary, but some of it is things kids wouldn't talk about, things that they're not thinking about.
My wife died a year and a half ago, and after her death, I had feelings of her presence from time to time. But I worried about her getting along in the spirit world. Is somebody taking care of her? My wife during the 70s used to wear very bright colored dresses, and she would make them herself. They'd be yellow and blue stripes and green stripes and different patterns, and she looked gorgeous in them. I had a very vivid dream. I don't dream very much, but I had a very vivid dream. Now, the public health officials will rate me as nuts, but in this dream, I saw my wife at about age 32 sitting between two of her deceased aunts, and they were having a ball. They were laughing, and my wife was wearing a dress which was beyond anything she'd ever worn before. And that was kind of comforting.
Thank you, Dr. Cutler. Thank you, Lily. Thank you, Michael. I hope every one of you got what you came here to get.